inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
I'm Jen Bodner, and you're listening to Yoga Digest Now. We feature real people and real stories. Yoga Digest is your resource for inspiration, health, and well-being. Wake up to the now with tips from the experts on being the best you, achieving your goals, and finding balance for your mind, body, and soul. The time for living life fully is now. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining the Yoga Digest Now podcast. I'm super excited to be visiting with Koya Webb today. She's a celebrity holistic health coach, and she's also the author of Let Your Fears Make You Fierce. This teaches you how to turn common obstacles into seeds for growth. Koya is also the founder of Get Loved Up. She's going to tell us all about that in a little bit. And she is running a yoga teacher training that I can't wait to hear more about as well. And she's got a podcast. So all kinds of things. Koya, you are a busy woman.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I just appreciate the opportunity to love. I really believe that is my mission. That is my dharma. That is my purpose. And the ability to love in many different ways. That's what I think about when I hear you read that. I'm just grateful that I have the capacity to love.
Well, Get Loved Up is so catchy. I remember I heard that last year sometime, and it just hooked me right away. Tell us kind of how that was born and what that means to you.
Absolutely. It was born because I am an empath and I am a lover and I love to love on people, but it came to my awareness over time that I was loving people to the detriment of myself. And I came to that awareness after sitting with a coach, and they were just like, do you understand that yes, you're loving, yes, that's a good thing, but you're putting yourself last, you're exhausted, and it's causing health issues. And so I realized that, you know, it's okay to love, but you have to have a balance. And in that balance, you have to practice self-care and make sure that you're healthy enough so that you're not pouring from an empty cup. So now I've learned how to practice self-care and mindfulness and all these different tools where I can fill my cup up and give from the overflow. As Lisa Nichols would say, that's my favorite quote. She just talks about filling your cup up and serving from your saucer. And I really think that has been my key to thriving, especially in hard times. And that is where Get Loved Up originated from. And the motto is love yourself, love others, love the world in that order. The more you love yourself, the more you can love others. And the more we love each other, the more the world will be a healthier place to live in.
Yes, yes, agreed. 100%. And I think you speak for all yoga teachers all around the world, and some of which you might be listening today, when it comes to giving. It's what we do, right? Sharing, creating space, offering space, allowing them to thrive and grow and be better. But it's a two-edged sword. You know, it can be something that we need, right? Because it's our purpose. And so we keep being drawn toward it. But then there's this very fine line when too much is too much. So you said something about noticing this, and you found a health coach to help you work through this. But how you mentioned self-care, and, you know, it's a word people don't like to hear, but setting healthy boundaries, I think, is something we all need to do. What are some of your best practices that help you keep your cup full so that you can serve others?
Well, one of my favorite things to do is breath work at night, in the morning. It's absolutely free. You don't need an outfit. You don't need a yoga mat. all you need is your breath. And I feel the breath is the gift that we get when we enter this world, and we don't need it anymore when we leave. And breath is spirit. And when we connect with our breath, we can use that connection to give us energy, to calm us down, and to cleanse us from things that have been built up over time. So definitely number one, healthcare is using the breath and using breath work.
So number two, before we move on too quickly, for some of our listeners and a lot of people who practice yoga might know exactly what you're talking about when you say breath work. But for those who are maybe not sure exactly, like breath work, like, you know, what is that? I mean, like, give us just an example of what a breath work session might look like in its simplest form for somebody that's never tried this before.
I love that question because breath work can be very meticulous and intense, or it can be very simple. And breath work is just, as it says, working with your breath. So one of the simplest breath work practices is just taking a deep inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Inhaling through your nose and exhaling through the mouth. And when we take those long, deep breaths, it allows us to release tension in the body. And sometimes when we're looking at the news, we're comparing ourselves to magazines or social media, we get tense and we get wound up, and it causes migraine headaches and tense shoulders and things like that. And just having that mindful, equal breathing, inhaling and exhaling, that is the simplest breath work every single person can practice. And I would say just do 5 to 10 of those breaths and you'll notice a difference. Another one is where your exhales are longer than your inhales. And when you inhale for 5 seconds and then exhale for 6 or 7 seconds, it starts to trigger your parasympathetic nervous system. And that's the nervous system that's responsible for you resting and digesting and having that sense of calm. And a lot of people have really compromised digestive systems, and it's because we're always in just this amped up, stimulated, sympathetic nervous system state because we are overstimulated by the media, overstimulated by all the things going on in our mind. So when we breathe, whether it be equal part breathing or whether it be longer exhales than the inhales, or whether it be something more complex like holotropic breathing, where you breathe, you inhale into your belly and your heart and you exhale. And that actually is a deeper type of breathing that starts to really release any issues you have in your tissues from past trauma. So I could talk about breath work for 2 hours, but in the most simplest state, it's just working with the breath to bring your body to a desired state.
Well, I will tell you that just in the couple minutes there that you were talking, I was actually allowed to come to my breath, and it is amazing what it triggers in your body physically. And you can almost feel the tension like rise up, and then you feel it soften, and you don't even know how much tension you're holding on to. So thank you for going into that and giving everybody some ideas of some simple practices. What are some other self-care practices you have to help you keep your cup full, sharing your love and light?
I love gratitude journaling in the morning, whether it be sometimes I write it down and sometimes I just sit and look at nature or walk in nature and just really breathe in how grateful I am to be alive, because a lot of people are sick, alive and well, because a lot of people are sick or going through hard times. And so just the fact that I wake up, I just take time in the morning to write down the things that I'm grateful for, or take a walk out in nature if it's not too cold outside, and just think about what I'm grateful for, gaze out of the window, whatever I can do just to bring in some mindfulness around the things that I have to be grateful for in my life.
Love it.
And then meditation. I love to sit in meditation, just clearing my mind after I've done my gratitude list. I just allow myself to clear my mind and to breathe. Sometimes I do my meditation before yoga, and sometimes I do it after. So a yoga practice can look like something nice and slow, more yin-like, meaning doing poses and holding them for anywhere up to 5 minutes, or it can be more vinyasa flow-like, so where I'm moving with the breath, and that's helping send the blood flow to every part of my body. So meditation, yoga, journaling, breath work, those are my favorite things to do every single day, and also taking a walk in nature. Those are some of my favorite things and ways that I practice self-care.
Great. I love that. And with that, just, you know, our work in itself of teaching classes is one thing, remaining grounded, and then layer in everything that's been going on in this huge transition we've all experienced and gone through. over the last year. How do you, you talk about, you know, letting your fears make you fierce. How do we overcome these extreme thoughts that are coming into our minds, be it from fear of the past or what we're currently in or the unknown of the future? I'd love for you to share with us how we can make our fears make us fierce.
Absolutely. I look at fear as feedback. Fear is just feedback of places within ourselves that need more love, that need to be nurtured, that need to be acknowledged. A lot of times we don't want to look at those things that are not so great, not so pretty and bubbly and beautiful, but it's those places that need our attention. Those places need to be nurtured. So when we have a fear that comes up, whether it be like, I'm not good enough, we need to not just shame ourselves for not feeling good enough, but just unpack, why don't I feel good enough? Am I comparing myself to other people? Has someone told me that I'm not enough? And really unpack our pain, unpack our trauma, unpack our anger when we feel those emotions. All those things are vibrations of fear. And I learned that going to Agape Spiritual Center and taking a course called The Course of Miracles and reading the book A Course of Miracles. And I learned that the major emotions of the soul break down to fear and love. And everything that's part of fear is, you know, comparison, anger, shame, guilt, and all those things in the vibration of love are compassion, patience, and things like that. And so it really helped me, especially a person who experiences a range of emotions, really breaking it down to, am I in fear or am I in love? And if I am in fear, where is that stemming from? Am I angry? Am I sad? And just really being able to acknowledge and identify, it really helps me process my pain and give myself what I need so that I can be fierce, so that I can unapologetically express myself mentally, spiritually, and physically, which is what fierce is to me. And fierce can be soft, it can be energetic, but it's unapologetic in allowing myself to express.
I love your passion and your spirit, and I'm so grateful to have you on today. This has been just really long awaited, and so thank you again for being here. You know, in mentioning, and you just, like, you own this, and it sounds like it's easy for you, okay? I'm sure you're going to tell me it's not, but so just hearing you and hearing, you know, and seeing you, one, you're just beautiful. And then, and hearing you from the inside, which is even more beautiful. You have all this confidence, right? And I think a lot of people do feel confident in a lot of situations, but then something can happen that triggers, be it a relationship with a family member, be it a situation in your professional life, that just triggers what has to be fear. It might come out as anger or a lack of confidence, and you feel your heart beating and your body temperature starting to change. How do we move through that, Koya? What do you do to move through that if you experience that?
I absolutely experience that. And the only reason that you hear a confident woman today is because I've been through a lot of trauma. You know, and I share in my book, Let Your Fears Make You Fierce, I share the trauma that I've been through sexual assault, the trauma that I've been through, just getting through life and not being afraid to put myself out there and travel the world and move to California all by myself. And, you know, there's things that come with that. And it hasn't been easy, and it took me a long time to find my way. It took me a long time to fit in. And even today, it's like, it's a practice, because still being a woman of color, it's hard to just feel like you're enough, no matter how hard you work. It's always, there's always these blocks based on the society that we live in and the things that we've been taught. And so it's choosing to be resilient. It's choosing to be in a vibration of love, despite being hurt, despite experiencing trauma. And I have a chapter in my book that says, you're not a victim, you're a creator. And when you think about it, we all at some point have been hurt by another. And that sucks. It's terrible. And in that moment, we can decide, okay, to acknowledge that pain and move forward as a creator, or we can re-victimize ourselves, or we can abuse ourselves over and over by really taking that abuse as and making it say something about our self-worth or say something about who we are, when really it's not. When we're abused by another person, that is an opportunity for that other person to heal and us to take that situation and to create something beautiful from it. And that's what I just train myself to do in every situation that hurts me, everything that harms me. I allow myself to take that situation and ask myself, what am I learning? How am I growing? How can I move forward? And that's helped me become a creator in my life. It's helped me to become resilient because I'm not letting those bad times mark me in a negative way. And then if I feel like it is, that if I have something that happens or a loss of a loved one and it takes a while to shake, because everything isn't just happen the next day, or I think it so, but some things take years to get over, but I'm continuously working at doing the breath work, doing the yoga, doing the transformational letter writing, working with my chakras, which I share in my book. And I use these tools to help me get through traumatic times. And the reason that I wrote the book is because I wanted to share these tools with everyone, so everyone can have that same opportunity to know that you have the power. You have the power to nurture yourself through whatever pain you've experienced and come out on the other side.
Well, and I love that you mentioned that it can take years, because it represents itself differently as we grow as individuals in our comfort level with ourselves and just getting to know ourselves a little better. Things start to rise up the older we get, and our perspective starts to shift. You said a couple things in there that I want to touch back on. At one point, you talked about, you know, fitting in. And I think that's something, you know, you think of that being like such a middle school thing, right? Like, oh, am I wearing the right clothes? Or, oh, you know, getting made fun of by somebody that, you know, just doesn't get it. But we can still kind of, I think, feel this way into adulthood. And especially as you start to, you know, get siloed into your world of yoga. And one of the many things I love about you is just how vulnerable you express yourself, you know, through your social media influence. And everything you write and share just is very real and very personal. And I wonder how you find your way to that, how you found your way to be so comfortable sharing really intimate information and putting it out there for others to absorb. That to me can be a huge fear that I know I face, and probably some of our listeners experience that to some degree.
It definitely wasn't easy. It definitely wasn't easy at all, because I remember, you know, at first sharing with people in a yoga setting, because one of the women had shared with me that she had experienced assault and had separated from her body. And until then, I had never really mentioned what happened to me. And in that moment, I wanted her to feel like she wasn't alone and that she could move past the situation, and, you know, that she wasn't what happened to her, but what she chooses to be after. And I just shared my story, and I just, you know, set my motivational piece after. And I was crying, she was crying, everyone in the room was crying. We're all like, but we all felt so much lifted. And that was the first time when I realized the power of my story and the fact that keeping it within myself was a part of my shame, a part of my fear that I was going to be judged by it, by my past. And sharing it allowed me to release, and also allowed me to realize that I am not my past. I am not any bad thing or way that I've been treated or any bad thing that's happened to me. And when I saw how that impacted not only me and her, but like every person in the room, I was committed, like, okay, I'm going to share my story because it's going to make a difference in the lives of people who hear it. But then the next step, so I was doing it in like intimate settings. And then I was, you know, writing my book, Let Your Fears Make You Fierce, and I'm sharing all the practices, but I didn't agree to sharing my story. But as I was speaking, to my editor, you know, and they were talking and it ended up coming out and they were like, you should include that in a book. And I'm like, no, not this book, not my first book. And I was like, maybe in the next one. And I was really, really hesitant, really, really fearful, really scared. And the name of my book was already set, Let Your Fears Make You Fierce, but I was still so scared. I was like, oh no, I don't know if I'm ready. And you know, sometimes we just have to do those things that we're not ready for. And what really made me go ahead and keep it is that I went to Bulgaria and I was leading a yoga class, and by then I'd had I forgot what you call them before they're ready to go to print. I had like a sample copy of the book, the galley of the book, and I let a woman read it, and I was there for 2 weeks, and she read the whole thing, and she was like, this just changed my life. She was just like, thank you so much. And she told me the ways it changed her life and how sharing her story made her realize that she hadn't processed her pain from an assault that she had experienced. And I was like, oh man, I was thinking about not including that in there. She's like, please. She made me promise her that I would. Aww. And we ended up becoming great friends. And I ended up keeping it in the book because I was on the fence and I was nervous, but it changing her life. And I made the promise to her, which is also a promise to myself, which is also a promise to humanity, to always use my life for good and my life to serve others.
That is an incredible response. And I think you just nailed it. It's almost like if you're going to go skydiving, right? You just got to take the you got to take the leap.
I was trying to stay in the plane. I was like, no.
But you just got to kind of cross that barrier sometimes, and I think it can be a huge, huge leap for many of us, and it can take a really long time just to even really uncover what it is. Actually, you know, some people don't even really know what it is that holds them back or what's coming up. It's just a feeling, a sensation, like I said, that affects you to a physical level, to your core. But it's great to do some research there and lean into that. And I'm happy that you found some supportive people around you is what it sounds like, to hold space for you and allow you to come to the reality that this was the best choice for you to share that and be open about it and realize how much your story will help others. So you touched on another a thing that I wanted to get around to discussing today. And you were talking about being a woman of color within the yoga industry and maybe just in general. And I think, you know, I have seen a lot of changes. Of course, being in the yoga world for as long as I have, I've always felt there's been diversity to an extent. But I don't think that there has been the bigger piece, right, which is the, you know, inclusion. And I guess it's just all what I choose to follow and choose to read. But I'd love to just get your perspective on that because, you know, interviews I was doing even as short as 5 years ago, we're talking about the problem that yoga has and how it's very inaccessible to many and it's very seems to be catered to, you know, wealthy white women for the most part. And again, I think I've seen a shift in this, or I choose to be a part of that shift. But I'd love to just have you shed some light on your experience and journey.
Absolutely. And just to be clear of what diversity is, because I feel like it's important to understand what diversity is, because, you know, you say, hey, I thought it was diverse. And it depends on what do you define as diverse? You know, diverse to you could mean women and men. Diverse to someone else could mean black and white. Diverse to someone else could be people of many different nationalities. So I think diversity is just, you know, differences. And I think a lot of times we seek out similarities, all the things that we have similar to a person. And the more we have, you know, similar, whether it be your skin color or your social status or your physical attributes, things like that. And a lot of times, you know, even when you think about yoga, you think about a specific size. I remember being in my yoga teacher training and the instructor telling a person that they couldn't do this thing because of their size. And I'm looking like, I've seen people do that thing at their size. And I spoke to them after and I showed them a person of the same size with the person they spoke with that was doing the thing that they said this person can do. They're like, wow, thank you so much. So I think it's just the mindset of if you haven't seen anything, then you don't know what's possible. And definitely when I came into the yoga scene over, 20 years ago now, definitely was not diverse. It wasn't diverse in the sizes that I saw on the mat. It wasn't this diverse in the colors that I saw in the mat. And I didn't see many people that didn't have many people that weren't financially well off, practicing. And so I feel that, it depends on where you live. Mm-hmm. You know, if you live in California, you might see more diversity than if you live where I grew up in Tennessee, places in the South where things are a bit more segregated. But I think I agree with you all in all around worldwide, as yoga is becoming more mainstream, it is becoming more diverse. And then you mentioned, inclusivity, and inclusivity is really how people feel, and so it's really based on if I feel that, okay, I'm in this room, but do I feel accepted? It's one thing to be in a room, but it's another thing when people are looking at you a different way or including you in the conversation or leaving you out. And a lot of times when someone is different, it is like high school. It is people huddle with people that are like them, that dress like them and talk about different things. And if a person doesn't understand how that can make another person feel left out, or if decisions are being made and the person that is different, whether it be their size or their race, is left out, then that's not being inclusive. So it's like, inviting someone to the table and serving whatever you want, but not asking a person what do you want to eat? What are you allergic to? Not really caring about the person. And when you care about a person, you care about their background. You care about who they are as a person. And I feel like that really, it comes into play when we're in these different settings and we want to start being more diverse and being more inclusive. You really have to look at everyone and who they are. You have to ask questions about who they are. It isn't just about saying, oh yeah, you can come to this class, but do you have a teacher that knows how to instruct them on how they can move their body? Are they going to feel comfortable with the instructions that you give if you've only worked with people at a certain size or a certain height or a certain weight? I know as a tall woman, I'm 5'10". And until I experienced a teacher that was a bit taller, I did not know how to move my body in a way to get it in the same positions that I would see other, yogis getting into. And I was like, why isn't this working with me? And so just little things like that, it takes mindfulness, which is what we learn in yoga. And that's really what prompted me to develop my own yoga school. And now we have the Get Loved Up Holistic Health and Yoga Teacher Training School, and it's virtual now because I like diversity, and I like talking in a mindful way and teaching other teachers just to be very open to understand that people's bodies move differently, people think differently. So how we can be more informed, how we can be more inclusive, how we can be more diverse, and that starts in our mind.
100%, and I think that's kind of what I was referring to is just in what I choose to gravitate to. And when I say, diversity, and I'm in Dallas, Texas, which, might be a little more diverse than a lot of the other cities in Texas and in my area. And so I've seen people of color, within yoga teacher trainings and within the yoga community. And I've seen people, get scholarships to do yoga teacher training. So different socioeconomic statuses. And then, being with Yoga Digest, I guess, is where it really expanded my mind as we started to work with people from all over the globe, all over the world. And in that way, I think social media, to shine a positive light on it, helped me see, you know, people like Jessamyn Stanley, you know, Catherine Budick, people who have different preferences and lifestyles, and just kind of working in the fitness industry in general. I've been in group fitness for a really long time. It just has seemed like a safer space, I guess, than other areas within fitness that I've noticed where, yeah, we've kind of always had homosexuals in our department. And this is just for me, what I've seen. So it's never been anything shocking or uncomfortable for me. You know, we've always had diverse ethnicity and people with different backgrounds and people with different color skin and being recognized for the different talents that they bring. But even with all of that, I'm realizing now, you know, just what you don't know, right? There's what you know, there's what you don't know, and then there's what you don't know, you don't know. And that's what I really want to open up to. And that's why I was really happy to have the opportunity to chat with you today, because I know that you feel very strongly about this topic. And it makes me happy to hear that that's what your yoga teacher training is leaning into. And now the question is, like, how do we spread this out to everybody? Because it's a lot of work in some areas and for some people, right?
Absolutely. It's a lot of work, and the work is worth it because it's our differences that make us beautiful. It's our differences that add unique perspectives to the world. And it takes really being, not saying, oh, I know everything or everything's okay and everything's open. It's realizing that we are trying our best and we know we must still try in order for it to continue to expand, for it to continue to be a safe space. Because again, even though people are in the same room together, it doesn't mean that they are understood. And in order to be understood, it takes conversations. So I agree with you. Like, things are very, very much so getting more and more diverse. And we've come a long way, and we still have a long way to go. Just by the things that we say, the ways we associate different things with different people. And that's something that we have to learn to have more compassion for. Things, if you wouldn't say it about one race, you shouldn't say it about another. And that's something that even in comedy and, you know, in trying to be more kind of hip, we're like, oh yeah, this person that, and we have these cliches and we want to laugh about it. But the thing is, that's the thing that we actually have to acknowledge, like, okay, this is a different culture, but when it comes to Black people do this or white people do this, and that's when it becomes very, very harmful for the psyche. And I truly believe that if we start just talking about cultures and say, okay, tell me about your culture, like, how do you eat? How do you, you know, I feel like it's very healing. Whereas when we just talk about the color of skin, especially as we're, the color of the skin is so multifaceted and so layered, that it just leaves us a very damp place. And I believe in order to warm up, it's like we have to start really understanding cultures of people beyond their skin color.
Agreed. And, you know, living here in the U.S., we, you know, just in general, are so tapped into our culture, you know, which is really just acknowledging a lot of other cultures. If you look at the typical holiday calendar, the typical one. I do love now that calendars are including a lot of celebrations and holidays that, I'll be honest and transparent and vulnerable here, I don't know what they are. And I need to know. I'd like to know what some of these holidays are that are on the newer calendars. I know my calendar this year is it's called an international, I guess, calendar that includes holidays and celebrations all around the world. And certainly the rest of the world seems to know a lot about our habits. And they might have that advantage on us. I think it's time that we wake up. And I think that's really what COVID has done, is opened everybody's eyes and made everybody level up in some way. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, that gets into, you know, equity and really realizing that when we can identify the barriers and we can identify the things that keep us apart, and we can identify like, oh, it's because I don't know about this culture, or I don't know about this person, or I don't know about this or that thing. And we open our hearts and our minds up to know, then we can learn, and then we can treat people differently and offer people the same opportunities when we get to know, like, what is going to be best for this person? What are the celebrations? What are the expectations and things like that? And so I really believe it can move in the right direction if we have this heart of learning, understanding, and then again, taking action to move in a positive direction.
Love it. And it's so simple. Learn, understand, and take action, right?
Absolutely. Right.
In that order.
1, 2, 3.
Where do you see the yoga industry headed into the future? Let's say 5 years from now.
I just see it continuing to be a resource for people to heal themselves and really come into wholeness. I feel like we have a lot that we're dealing with right now, and with yoga being mainstream, it's almost the antidote. Yoga, breathwork, meditation. I mention those all together as one, because we study all of those in our yoga teacher training and how they come together to help us process the pain that we're kind of digging up in society by unpacking the pain of humanity so that we can heal. So on that uncovering, it's messy and it hurts. And I feel like yoga is a beautiful tool. Yoga, meditation, and breath work and self-care is a beautiful tool to help us get through this time where we're unpacking our pain together and we're healing together. So I think it's going to continue to spread. It's going to continue to get more and more diverse, and it's going to continue to be a beautiful gift to humanity.
And I love the way that, you know, I see us just finding more ways, even though we're different, to connect. And so I think about like-mindedness within the yoga world and, you know, lifestyle choices outside of religious or political beliefs or socioeconomic status. I know you're a plant-based, are you vegan?
Yes, I've been vegan for 15 years.
I wanted to just kind of dig back for a brief moment, and then we'll get back on track. But just for our listeners today, kind of tell us how you wound up in this space. Was it like something you knew when you were really young? I think you said you've been studying yoga for 20 years. Did you always know you were just going to be a yoga teacher? How did this all evolve?
No, I didn't know that I was going to be a yoga teacher. I didn't know that I was going to be vegan. I really had no idea about yoga and about, you know, veganism growing up. I mean, I'm a Southern girl. I'm from Tennessee, and we had pork that we got from our neighbor, and we roasted on the church parking lot every summer. And I felt like just getting something to eat and not eating too many processed foods and snack cakes were, I thought that was healthy. And so when I started to practice yoga, after a track injury, and yoga helped me heal, helped me practice self-care and heal my body and my mind, I started to eat vegetarian. And then in that eating vegetarian, I start feeling better. I start having more energy. I start having more mental clarity. And then I met another track athlete, and they were like, why do you still eat fish and eggs? And I was like, oh, for my protein. And, you know, I just want to make sure that I can perform and things like that. They were like, well, I don't eat fish and eggs. I'm completely vegan. And I've been this way for, at the time, I think it was over 4 years. I was like, wow. And this person was fit and ripped. I hadn't seen that. Every person that I'd seen that was vegan, you know, at the time was, you know, I didn't see many people that have much weight on them. You know, coming from the South, I was already slim and tall, so I wasn't trying to lose any curve or any muscle. that I gained over the years. So I was very, I guess a little vain and saying that, I don't want to lose anything. So once I saw him and he was just like, oh, you can do it. I was like, all right, well, I'll try, I'll give it a try. I'm very much an experimentalist. I'm willing to try something and see how I feel. And that's definitely helped me out in learning all the things that I've learned to date. So I was like, okay, I'll try it out. And so I went in and I tried it out and I felt even better and even more. And at this time, I'm thinking, I cannot feel any better than I already felt. I'm good. And I did. I really did. And I had even more energy and I was sleeping good. And I was reading books like The Rainbow Green Life Food Cuisine. And I learned that not only is this lifestyle better for my health, but it's also better for the animals, because these animals are being abused or being pumped full of hormones, which is also affecting our health, and they're being mass produced, and just all of this pain. I realized, like, wow, this is not a happy cow. All right, this is not a happy cow, and this is not okay. This is not the pig from my neighbor that grew, and it's not Wilbur.
I don't know where this came from.
Exactly, these animals have been abused, and so, and it very much, I think when I was a little girl, I remember seeing a deer for the first time in my yard. And I remember hearing gunshots. And I was like, what are those gunshots? That's my dad. He's like, they're hunting the deer. I was like, oh, no. And I cried. I was like, don't let them kill Bambi. And I was so terrified. And I begged my dad not to let hunters come on our property and not to kill Bambi. And then, but at that time, I did not make the connection that there was dead animals on my plate, just a different right? So I didn't make that connection then, but then I realized that I had that compassionate heart even as a young girl. And so once I realized like all of the abuse that was going into the consumption, I was like, well, hey, if I don't need this to be healthy, if I can be okay without, I choose not to. And then I learned like how much of the earth's resources that we use consuming animal products. We use so much water and so much land that isn't even necessary when we can just be eating plants, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. And so once I learned that, I was like, all right, I'm in this for life. I'm not going back. I want to be part of the change. And I made that commitment. Because I think if it was just the health, every now and then I would have whatever I wanted, but it's really the animal abuse and also the being eco-friendly and doing what's best for my planet that really made me stick and made me say, you know what, I wanna let people know that you can be healthy on a fully 100%. Raw vegan, plant-based. And I say plant-based because I also call myself a dirty vegan. So I'll eat like, processed food, and I like going out to restaurants, and it's all about balance. So mostly I eat healthy green juices, smoothies, salads, and veggie bowls. But then I also like to, be a foodie, and I like barbecue and curry, and I like going to all the restaurants and seeing how people can make food like I used to eat back home. So I kind of have fun with it. And honestly, I feel like that's helped me be healthy. Because I don't really, and when I first started, I was very strict. I was raw vegan for 2 years, which is totally, it was beautiful experience. But traveling, I started adding some cooked food back on because of traveling to different countries and Bali and different places. I got Bali belly one time and I was just like, okay, so I'm going to eat
Bali belly. Do I even want to know?
It's basically sometimes when every different country has its own levels of bacteria and everything in the food and the water. And Bali belly is something that happens a lot with travelers when you go there and you drink the water or you have, you too much of bacteria that your stomach is not used to. We have bacteria here too, so people can come here and get sick as well. And so when you have that happen, then you get what's called Bali belly. So one way, and eating a lot of salads with a lot of water, that water is one of the biggest ways that you can get it. And so eating a lot of salads and eating a lot of fresh fruits, you naturally, because it's been washed in it and things like that. So I tend to, when I travel, I eat more like cooked vegetables and things like that. So it's just been a beautiful journey. And now I love making food. I have recipe videos on YouTube, and I love sharing with people how yummy and delicious vegan food can be and how mindful veganism is. Because in yoga, we talk about, you know, causing the least amount of harm. And, you know, it's not about being perfect or getting perfect, but I just encourage people to put as many plants on your plate as you can. And you're making a big difference in the world.
Well, I think, you know, that all makes perfect sense to me. You know, for some of our listeners who struggle with this, what might seem like an extreme lifestyle, I think the thing that stands out the most is when you just think about the environment. And I don't think there's anybody that can look around and say, hey, yeah, you know, the air is getting cleaner and, you know, our resources are getting more abundant. It's actually the complete opposite of that. And, you know, just even inviting people to experience like, hey, why don't you try like one meal a day where you just don't, you know, have any animal product, or maybe you do Meatless Monday and just gradually, like you said, be the change. And that's where I really hope we're headed as an industry. I feel like we have bigger work to do now than ever as healers, as storytellers, you know, as yoga teachers, whatever you want to call our community, just spreading this information. So I hope that you remain bold and strong and fierce and continue sharing the way you do so openly, because it really is inspiring. We haven't talked a whole lot about your spiritual side, but I think that's one of the other things that I really connect to, because you do have this deep sense of spirituality that's very in line with the elements. So it's very universal. And I love when you send out your exercises for, like, you know, manifestation and in alignment with the moon and just your meditations. You have journals. You send out like 10 questions or 10 exercises. Where did those come? How did those come about? What inspired
them? They came about just as divine downloads. And that's what I call the messages that I receive from spirit. And I just channel like in the morning and after my meditation, and it just comes through. And I do this every new moon and every full moon. And I also have a sacred sister circle every new moon where we do rituals. Like we just did a cord cutting that was phenomenal. And that's basically any toxic relationships in your life, you just ask for a release of them. Because sometimes we have, you know, toxic ties. If you feel like negative when you hear a person's name or when you think about a person's name, a lot of times it could be some different insecurities or different things that have made the relationship go sour. And cord cutting, a lot, it doesn't necessarily mean a person's going to exit your life, but it can give you a new beginning in the relationship and release any negative energy. So we do cord cutting, water rituals, where we drink water, just so many things that help us raise our vibration.
Cord cutting, I've never heard of before. Is it just for eliminating people, or is it also for like eliminating behaviors or habits?
Behaviors, habits, again, not necessarily about eliminating people, but it's about releasing toxicity in a relationship, releasing toxicity in a job. Sometimes it might mean you leaving a job or leaving a person, but it also might be just releasing those negative feelings and emotions and leaving those behind and starting the work with a different mindset and starting the relationship with a different mindset as well.
So what is cord cutting exactly? Tell me a little bit about the ceremony.
The ceremony is very energetic. So it's, you just visualize the cords from, and you could do it a couple different ways. You can just, I like to say, and ask spirit to release any relationship in my life that is not for me, and to bring in any relationships that are for my growth and expansion, and just allow spirit to do the work. If someone specifically or a job specifically you're having a challenge with, you can visualize that situation, that job or whatever it is, and visualize the cord and cut it energetically and see it being cut and releasing. You can also soak in a bath of Epsom salt water and see the connection between you and the job, or you and the person, or you and this, even an emotion that you don't want to have. Like if you're feeling a lot of shame, you can cut the cord on shame, you know, it's just like, I don't want to have that anymore. So it's very energetic, and we're all energy. And that's what I learned that I didn't learn growing up, that I can energetically shift my energy at any time. Just like the world can shift my energy by things I hear on the news or social media, I can also empower myself by knowing that I can shift my own energy. And that's how I empower people in my trainings, and just have them realize you are powerful. You don't have to be a victim of circumstance or a victim of what you see. Again, even though you are in a moment, you can shift it back so that you're a creator and you can clean the slate and create a better life for yourself, a better mindset. No matter what you've thought in the past and no matter how dark, there's always an opportunity to shift your perspective and choose to write a new story for yourself. We are all creators of our own story. So at any point, we can choose to rewrite our script.
Oh gosh, you say that and I believe you. And I just, again, just love your confidence and the passion behind your message. Just to recap a few of the takeaways today with regards to, and you've done a lot of work. So I can tell where this stems from, everything from A Course in Miracles and dealing with past trauma, and writing a book had to be so healing for you as well, and the daily practices of breath work and gratitude and meditation and just being so mindful of how you use your body and what you allow in your body and what you allow in your mind, I can tell has been just your life's work. Please do tell us, Koya, any exciting ventures you have coming up. Anything you want to share with our listeners today?
Absolutely. Well, I am getting ready for my Get Loved Up virtual retreat in February, and it's absolutely free. It's going to be February the 19th, 20th, and 21st, and I'm going to have some of the world's most inspiring light workers sharing about spirituality, wellness, and entrepreneurship, and how we can really own this space of wellness and spirituality, and we can help each other heal through whatever it is we're going through in our lives. I'm so excited about that coming up, and I was really adamant about making sure that it's a free offering so everyone can come and be a part of it.
Awesome. That's great. How do we sign up for that?
You can go to my website at koyaweb.com, KOYAWEBB. And I also have my yoga teacher training school. So if you think you want to dive in, even if you don't want to become a yoga teacher, just to learn more about meditation and yoga and spirituality, we have a 100 hour that's mostly just informative, letting you know just like the intro versions of what you'll learn in the 200 hour. And if you think you might want to go further, you can go to the 200 hour. You can go all the way up to the 500 hour and never teach if you want. But we have a 100, a 200, a 300, and a 500 hour for people who want to just dive in and learn more about spirituality and holistic health and how to live a healthier life.
And your book, this is available, and we can find this on your website as well, Amazon?
Absolutely. Let Your Fears Make You Fierce, How to Turn Common Obstacles into Seeds for Growth.
And we have a great article on Yoga Digest that you wrote for us. Thank you so much for that, with exactly how to face your fears and move through them, which we will share in the link to the intro to this podcast. But Koya, what an honor. Thank you so much. This just proves that patience pays off. And I'm just so glad you were able to make some time to visit with me today and share with our listeners. Blessings to you. Just continue to be the change, the voice, the light that you are, the love that you represent for us all. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.